Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back to today's Daf Yomi, which is Shabbos Daf Kuf Nun Hey. We are at the Mishnah, Amud Aleph, about 15 lines from the top. The Mishnah will instruct us regarding preparing food for an animal on Shabbos, says the Mishnah. Matirin, one may untie pikiye amir, bundles of stalks of hay, lifnei behema, before the animal on Shabbos. Umefaspis in a sakipin. Likewise, one may spread out, loosen up the content of these keeping bundles, which the Gemara will describe and explain to us. So that as well can be done on Shabbos before the animal, in order to make the content of the bundle attractive and to whet his appetite. So this is allowed to be done on Shabbos. Avaloyes ha-zirin. But one may not do this to the bundles of zirin. So it seems to be a bit cryptic. We have the pekiyin, we have the kipin, we have the zirin. The Gemara will describe to us and translate to us the exact meaning of these terms. Continues the Mishnah in the second half of the Mishnah. Eimaraskin lois ha-shachas. One may not crush, shred. Shachas was a certain form of grass which was fed to animals. So you can't crush that. Lois ha-cheruvin, nor the carobs, lifnei behema, to place before his animal. Bein dako, bein gasa, whether we're speaking about a small-sized animal, behema daka, or a large-sized animal, behema gasa. So livestock are generally categorized into two categories. We have the large-sized animals, the cows, the oxen, etc. And we have the daka, which is the goat, the lamb. So in either case, one cannot crush shachas or cheruvin to serve these animals. Rabbi Yehuda matir b'cheruvin ledaka. He says one can crush cheruvin, carobs, in order to feed his behema daka, small-sized animal. Rashi says, due to its tenderness, it has delicate, not so strong teeth. Shishineo daka, his thin teeth, doesn't have the ability to chew through the cheruvin, these carobs, unless they are crushed in preparation for the feeding. Continues the Gemara. We're going to have two approaches to interpret and explain our Mishnah. The first one is Rav Huna, Amar Rav Huna. Heinein pekin, heinein kipin. The Mishnah began with three items. We have pekiye amar, the Gemara will refer to them as pekiyin, a certain type of bundle. We have kipin and we have zirin, says Rav Huna. Actually, pekiyin and kipin are one and the same. They're both bundles containing straw, containing hay, to be fed for the animals. What then is the difference between the two? So again, the words heinein pekiyin, heinein kipin, pekiyin and kipin are both of the same content. Rather, pekiyin is tray. Pekiyin are bundles which were tied up twice. So one tie on top, one tie on bottom. Kipin is tlasa. They are bundles which were tied three times, so there's another tie in the middle of the bundle. So they're both the same content. They are stalks meant to be fed for the animals, and they are tied up in different manners. We have pekin, which were double tied, and kipin, triple tied. What is the third item on the list? Zirin. That's the arzi. Those are twigs, branches, cedar branches, which Rashi describes as follows. When they are young and soft and fresh, they can be fed to animals, but mostly people will maintain these to be used for heating purposes, for fuel. So the Mishnah again is discussing three types of bundles, two of them containing hay, containing straw, the third one containing branches. V'ha'kama, this is what the Mishnah says. Matirin pekiye amr lefnei behema. One may untie the pekiye amr, which is the double tied bundles. So you may untie them umefasvesin, as well as loosening up, spreading out the content of these bundles to make them attractive and accessible to his animal. V'hu'adin lekipin. The same thing applies to the kipin, which are the bundles that are tied three ties, triple tied bundles of hay. Avaloyis hazirin. But when it comes to zirin, which are those bundles of twigs, one can't do any of this. Loy lefasfes, he can't spread them out, the content cannot be dispersed, loy lahater, nor can he even untie the bundle. Why is that? Amar Rav Chisda, my time of the Rav Huna. What is the basis? What is the reason of Rav Huna's approach? Kasavar, because he holds lemitrach bo'ech l'tarchinan. One may exert himself, do tircha, to enhance and improve the quality of the animal feed. in order to make it attractive and accessible to his animal. So you can go ahead and take those bundles of hay, open them up, spread them out, so that they're accessible and enhanced and improved for the animal. However, one cannot make food. He can't turn a non-food into food. This is referring to the zirin, those branches, which as Rashi described, which were generally used for heating, for fuel. So he's taking something which is an inedible item and turning it into something edible, turning it into animal feed. It's as though he's creating something. It's like noilat. So with the Rabban, one cannot do that. It appears as though he's creating and fashioning something new on Shabbos. So that explains Rav Huna's approach. When it comes to doing tircha, exerting effort to make something accessible, to enhance the quality or appearance of the animal feed, that's okay. So you could untie, spread out, loosen up the hay, because it began as animal feed, it ended as animal feed. He didn't create and fashion any something anew. Whereas when it comes to those branches of arzi, those cedar branches, he's turning something which is a non-food into food. And therefore, it is usher. He can't spread them, can't disperse them, he can't even untie the bundles. So according to Rav Huna, we focus on the object, on the item at hand. He can only enhance it, but he can't recreate it. So this is the first approach in our Mishnah. We have another approach. Rav Yehuda Amar, Hein Hein Pekin. So first let's focus on the translation. Rav Yehuda has a difference of opinion with Rav Huna regarding the translation of the Mishnah, which will result in a halachic dispute. So firstly, regarding the translation, Hein Hein Pekin, Hein Hein Zirin. So Rav Yehuda maintains that of the three items mentioned in our Mishnah, the Pekin, the Kipin, and the Zirin, so number one and three are identical. Pekin and Zirin are one and the same. They are bundles containing the straw. Hein Hein Pekin, Hein Hein Zirin. What the difference is, Pekin is tray, Pekin are double-tied bundles, Zirin are those triple-tied bundles. So one and three in the Mishnah are actually bundles of hay. Regarding item number two in the Mishnah, Kipin, that actually is the bundle of branches. Kipin the arzi. This is what the Mishnah is saying. Matirin peke amrefne behem. One may untie those bundles of hay, the double tied bundles of Nebehema, aval pispusiloi, but to disperse the content, to spread it out, to make it attractive and accessible, that he can't do. Because that's unnecessary exertion. According to Rabbi Yehuda, the only thing we allow is something which is absolutely vital and critical for the animal, to feed the animal, but something which is merely extra for convenience sake, to add to the experience, to add pleasure to the experience, that's not mutter. So to untie those bundles, that's fine, because that makes it accessible for the animal. But to be mefaspes, that he can't do, even if we're talking about bundles of straw. Aval pispusiloi. The kipin, in contrast to the kipin, which according to this approach is referring to the bundles of those branches, those fresh, soft branches. In this case, pispusi nami mefaspesinon. We're allowed to spread them apart and loosen them in order to make them accessible for his animal. And they're lumped together. The animal won't get to it. So you can spread it apart, disperse it, to make it attractive and accessible to his animal. Why? Because it's critical. It's needed. Otherwise, the animal won't approach it. So again, the point here is, whatever is needed for the sake of the animal is mutter. Aval loy hazirin. However, zirin, which is actually another way of describing those bundles of straw, the triple-tied bundles of straw, Avaloya Hazirin Lefasfes. That he cannot disperse, he can't spread them out because it's not necessary. The straw would be eaten regardless of whether it's dispersed or lumped together. Elalahater, but he's allowed to untie them, because that indeed is something which is necessary, critical for the preparation of the animal feed. So the point to come to Yehuda is very simple. Whatever is needed, you may do. Whatever is absolutely not necessary, you may not do. Therefore, when it comes to bundles of hay, he can untie them, otherwise the animal won't have access to them. But he can't go and disperse them. When it comes to the bundles of those branches, where not only does he need to untie them, but actually needs to disperse them to make them edible for his animal. Apparently when they lump together, it's too difficult for the animal to approach it. So dispersion is necessary element here, and therefore contributed that's mutter. Amar Rava, my time is Rav Yehuda. Indeed, what is the basis for Rav Yehuda's approach? What is his reason? Because he holds shvui oichle mashvinan. To fashion food, we do that on Shabbos, meaning in order to make it accessible, to make it edible, certainly we do that because it's critical, it's needed for the preparation of the food for this animal. Mitrach ba'ichla, but merely to exert tircha, in order to enhance, to add convenience and pleasure, like dispersing of those bundles of hay. Lo itarchina, we don't do that. So the point is very simple. According to Rabbi Yehuda, whatever is necessary to make it edible or accessible, that's mutter. Anything past that is asur. So again, the point here is, Rabbi Yehuda holds, let's focus on the item, on the object at hand. To improve, to enhance, to loosen things, to add convenience, that's mutter. As long as he doesn't create something, doesn't fashion something new, like those bundles of branches, which are considered to be inedible. They're meant for firewood. Therefore, he can't tinker with them. He can't open them up. Certainly, he can't disperse them because he's fashioning. He's creating something. So, according to Rav Huna, we focus on the object. According to Rav Yehuda, we focus on the animal. What is the need of the behemoth here? And whatever is needed for his feeding is mutter. It appears that Rav Yehuda is not concerned with the fact that he's creating something anew because, you know, as we find by other malachas, toichen, for instance, one can grind if it's for the sake of the upcoming meal. Certain forms of beira mutter, because it's considered to be food preparation. Likewise, apparently Rav Yehuda holds, this is not regarded like as though he's fashioning something, as though he's creating, processing something. He's merely preparing the animal's food. It's preparing oichel here. I said tzarech achila. So therefore, anything which is needed for the sake of the achila of the animal is mutter. So even when it comes to those branches, he can open them and disperse them in preparation of the animal's meal. However, something which is not absolutely necessary, that he cannot get involved with whatsoever. Continues the Gemara, Tanan, let's take a look at our Mishnah, who we seem to have a kasha on Rav Huna's approach. The Mishnah says, Eimaraskin es hashachas, this is the second half of the Mishnah, you can't crush that grass which is used as animal feed, besa charuvin, nor the carobs, lifnei behema, before the animal, ben daka, ben gasa, whether it's a small or large size animal. It says the Gemara, my love, shall we not speculate that charuvin dumi d'shachas? What type of carobs are we speaking about? Soft and edible carobs, like the shachas grass, which we presume to be soft and edible. Ma shachas d'rekichi, just as the shachas is soft and edible, af charuvin d'rekichi, likewise the charuvin described in our Mishnah, is speaking about ones which are soft and edible. Nevertheless, Tanakama says, you cannot go ahead and crush these items to enhance them, to add convenience and pleasure for the sake of his animal's meal. Apparently, we cannot be matriach, exert ourselves to enhance the animal's food. This seems to negate Rav Huna's position. Who allows this? So Rav Huna will respond as follows. Let's reinterpret the Mishnah. Loi, no. Shachas dumi d'charuvin. Actually, let's do it in the reverse. Let's compare shachas grass to charuvin, to carobs. Ma charuvin d'akushi. Let's assume we're speaking about standard carob, which is already dried up and hard. Av shachas d'akushi. Likewise, the shachas, which is listed together with the charuvin, are speaking about what type of grass. It's hard and inedible for this animal. How could that be? We're speaking about small donkeys, young donkeys, who have a difficult even chewing this grass unless it's chopped up and grated for their sake. So Rav Huna learns the Mishnah a bit differently. He says, our Mishnah is speaking about taking something which is inedible, hard carobs, grass which is inedible for this young donkey. And therefore the Mishnah says, one cannot process it. One cannot grate it, can't crush it. Because by doing so, he's taking something which is essentially inedible and turning it into something edible. He's fashioning something anew. He's creating something anew. He's turning it into food. And it's like mailed. And therefore, it's us. Continues the Gemara. Let's bring a raya from the next part of the Mishnah. Toshma, Rav Yehuda matir, becharuvin ledak. Rav Yehuda responds to the Tanakhama. He says, look, You maintain you can't crush those carobs? Well, for a behemoth daka, who has tender and delicate teeth, one should be allowed to crush those charuvim. Now, why does Rav Yehuda say ledaka? Ledaka in legas aloy, this can only be done for a behemoth daka, but not for a large-sized animal. Let's analyze these words. Yamas bishlema. Now, it all works well if you propose that the Tanakama Savar Tanakama, who says you can't crush the carobs, he holds it's edible. It's perfectly suitable to be eaten by the animal. And therefore, mitrach b'uchla l'tachinan. We don't go and exert ourselves to enhance, to improve the quality of the food. Shavuyim ashvinan. However, when there's a need to render it edible, we're allowed to do that. Meaning, in accordance with the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, that when needed and when necessary, certainly one can render a non-food item into food. You can take something which is inedible to the animal and make it edible. But the reason why Tanakhama doesn't allow crushing the charuvin, because he holds it's perfectly edible. Therefore, there's no reason to crush it, which is merely enhancing and improving it. So this would work well. And the rejoinder is, Rabbi Yehuda responds by saying, Hainu dekam Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda responds by disagreeing. He says, look, you don't allow crushing those charuvin because they're edible? Hacharuvin ledaka nami shivu yoichlu. I maintain that carobs, when they're fed to young, small animals, they're inedible. You must render them edible. You must crush them to make it suitable for this small animal. Therefore, I hold that you should be matar, you should allow crushing the carobs for the sake of the himadaka. So this all works if all agree that one can prepare whatever is necessary for an animal, even if it involves rendering something edible, turning something into food. Then we understand the machlokes is properly. Tanakhama maintains there's no reason to crush charuvin because they're edible as is. Rabbi Yehuda maintains, no, for behemoth daka, it's considered to be a non-food entity. He can't process it. He can't chew it. So one should be allowed to crush charuvin to prepare for behemoth daka, to render it edible. So this works well according to Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that one may make something, turn something into food, if necessary. Eloi amris. But if you maintain, meaning according to Rav Huna Pshat, who maintains that the discussion here is of a different nature. Tanakhama savar shvuya oichle lemashvinan. Tanakhama holds that you know why you can't crush those carobs? Because he holds, we're speaking about hard carobs, which are inedible. As we discussed earlier, we're speaking about dried carobs, we're speaking about bundles of shachas being fed to young donkeys. They're considered to be inedible, non-food entities. And therefore, Tanakhama maintains one cannot turn it into food, right? Remember, Ravuna holds, you can't create something. You can't turn it into food. And that's why Tanakhama maintains, you can't crush these carobs. Tanakhama savar shvuy oichle mashvin, you can't turn something into food. Mitruch bochle matruchinan, however, merely to enhance, to exert effort to enhance food, to improve the value, that you'll be able to do. This is all according to Rav Huna's pshat. So this will be the shita of Tanakhama. And we're speaking about something which is inedible. And therefore, you can't crush it. Because you can't create something, you can't create food. And now Rabbi Yehuda responds, and it's going to appear that the wording of Rabbi Yehuda is a bit difficult. Because what's Rabbi Yehuda responding? Rabbi Yehuda, the mat, Becheruvin Ledaka, Rabbi Yehuda will respond and says, look, this works well regarding a behema gasa. But regarding a behema daka, I maintain that one can go ahead and crush these charuvin. Now, what would be the svara of Rabbi Yehuda that one can crush charuvin? Apparently, Rabbi Yehuda will hold, Mashal explains, Rabbi Yehuda will hold that this is different than those branches, where by loosening those branches, you're actually turning it into food. Branches are meant to be used as fuel. You can't go and recreate it, give it a new status, a new classified as food. That's called creating something. But when it comes to carobs, which are essentially a food item, Rabbi Yehuda maintains it's not considered to be putting it through a transition. You're not changing its status. You're not turning something which is a non-food entity into food. These charuvin are essentially food. Therefore, Yehuda disagrees with Tanakhama. Why can't he crush those carobs to feed his animal? He's not turning something inedible into something edible, these things are food to begin with. Now, what's difficult is, why then does Rabbi Yehuda limit this to Behemah Da'aka? He says, well, we can crush these carobs for the sake of a small animal. If the whole point of Rabbi Yehuda is that he's not giving it a new status, he's not transforming anything from non-food into food, he's merely crushing a food item from a larger piece to a smaller piece, making it convenient for the animal. So Rabbi Yehuda should not have said Daka. Rabbi Yehuda demata berchuvin ladaka koshken legasa. Certainly for a large size animal, it's not considered to be making something new, rendering it edible, because certainly for a large size animal who has the ability to chew through even dried, hard carobs, crushing these carobs for his sake would not be considered as though you're making something new and rendering it edible. You're merely enhancing it for his sake. You're merely improving the quality, making it more attractive for the animal. So why does Rabbi Yehuda cite the word daka? Why does he specifically limit his opinion, his allowance, to behemah daka? If anything, certainly the gasa would be more of a reason to be matter, because for the gasa, who has full ability to eat even dry carobs, it's not considered as though he's making something edible. So again, the words in the Gemara of Yehuda demata berchuvin ladaka koshken legasa, certainly for behemah gasa this should be mutter. Says the Gemara, mi savras daka daka mamash? Do you think that Rabbi Yehuda, when he said the word daka, he means a small size animal? My daka gasa. Actually, when he said daka, he meant a large size animal. Meaning that if anything, Rabbi Yehuda prefers a large size animal over a small size animal, because for a large size animal who has the ability to chew through even dried carobs, smashing, crushing those pieces of carobs, is not considered as though he's creating something. So indeed, Rabbi Yehuda is speaking specifically about a behemah gasa who has full access to this carob even before it's crushed. So by crushing it, he's not creating something new, he's merely enhancing, he's improving it. It's for convenience sake. And indeed, that's what Rabbi Yehuda is exactly saying. He's discussing a behemah gasa specifically. Umay karli daka. Why then does he refer to it as daka? The daika ba'uchla. Because the behemah gasa actually chews well, has the ability to chew and chew, and for him, crushing these carobs would not be considered as though you're turning something inedible into something edible, because he has the ability to crush and to chew even uncrushed carobs. So this will be the answer according to Rav Huna. Certainly, we're speaking about hard, dry carobs, which are essentially inedible according to the Tanakhama. Therefore, he can't crush them. Rav Yehuda says, well, for behemah gasa, let's not consider it as though he's creating something, you know, because the behemah gasa has full ability to chew through even hard and dried carobs. Therefore, there's no reason to prevent one from crushing it, because he's not creating something, he's not fashioning something anew. Says the Rambam, but that can't be so. Hamidiktani Reisha. Since the Reisha, meaning the Tanakhama, uses the term bein daka bein gasa, you can't crush it. Not for a behema daka, nor for behema gasa. Apparently, speaking about these two classes of animals. Mechlal Rabbi Yehuda, apparently when Rabbi Yehuda responds to Tanakhama and says, well, you can crush it for the daka, what does he mean by daka? He's referring to the Tanakhama's way of speaking. Daka, daka mamash. Daka here is a behema daka, literally. Daka, daka mamash ka'amar. So now, it's difficult. Why does Rabbi Yehuda specify his heter, his allowance, for behema daka? Kasha, indeed, it's going to remain difficult. At this point in the Gemara, we didn't have a teretz on Rav Huna from Al-Mishnah. So just for clarity's sake, let's just quickly review this last piece of complicated Gemara. So briefly, Rav Huna maintains, one can enhance food, but he can't create. He can't make something edible. Rav Yehuda maintains, anything which is necessary for the animal, any type of preparation, opening up, loosening up, everything would be mutter. We had a Mishnah where the Tanakhama says you can't crush those carobs. Rabbi Yehuda says, you couldn't crush it for the behemah daka. This will work well according to Rabbi Yehuda. Because according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Tanakhama doesn't allow crushing those carobs, which are, we're speaking about carobs which are edible, and therefore he holds that you can't crush them because you can't go ahead and exert effort to enhance the quality of the animal food. We're speaking about charuvin, which are fresh, which are soft and edible. Whereas according to Rabbi Yehuda, he says you can crush those charuvin for the sake of a behemoth daka, because he can't eat it otherwise. It's inedible. So you can go ahead and create this animal food for the behemoth daka because he needs it. It's necessary. It's crucial. So this will be the pshat in the Mishnah according to Rabbi Yehuda's approach. But according to Rav Huna, we have some difficulty. Because according to Rav Huna, we've established that the Mishnah is speaking about carobs which are hard and dry and edible. And therefore the Tanakh maintains you can't crush them because you're going to be creating something, going to be turning it into food. Now Rav Huna disagrees and he says for a behema, daka, you can go ahead and crush it. Because apparently Rav Huna holds that he's not creating something anew. This carob is considered to be food to begin with. He's not rendering it into food. The kasha was, why is this limited to behemoth daka? If anything, just the opposite. A behemoth gasa who has full ability to chew through even dry carobs. By crushing those carobs, he's not rendering anything edible. He's not making something new. Therefore, it's merely enhancing the food. He's improving the quality of the food, which is mutter. And this would be the Rabbi Yehuda's response to the Tanakhama. But the difficulty remains, why is Rabbi Yehuda specifically cite and limits his heter to behemoth daka? If anything, it should apply to behemoth gasa more than behemoth daka. And indeed, the Gemara leaves it off as a kash. Continues the Gemara Tashma, we have a raya, a kasha against Rabbi Yehuda. The Mishnah says, "Esadluim mechatchin esadluim from behema." One could cut the melons before the animal, v'esal nevela from klovim. Likewise, he can cut a carcass before the dogs. Myla, should we not assume and speculate that deluin dumi de nevela? We're speaking about melons which are soft and edible, similar to the flesh of a dead animal. Ma nevela derekicha, just as the nevela is soft and edible, av deluin, likewise the deluin described in the Mishnah, is speaking about the rekichi, soft and edible, alma terchinim ba'uchla. Apparently, one is allowed to exert effort and tircha to enhance and improve the animal food, because here, it's edible regardless. Why is he allowed to cut through the melons and the nevela to feed his animal? Apparently, this is a kashan of Yehuda. Does not allow this type of activity. No. Let's reinterpret the Mishnah. Actually, nevela here is meant to be compared to deluim, these gourds. And let's assume we're speaking about a standard melon, which is actually hard. Ma deluim de'ashuni. Just as deluim, we're speaking about hard ones, which need to be cut down to smaller pieces to allow the animal to access and to eat it. Likewise, the nevela we're discussing here is a hard nevela, which is inedible, unless you actually cut it, and therefore one can cut them down in order to make them edible for his animal. Says, what type of nevela needs to be cut down? What type of nevela is hard and tough and must be prepared in this manner to make it edible? The basa pili, animal meat, which needs to be cut down to make it edible. Inami, alternatively, beguriyaisa zutri, when he's feeding the small puppies, which will not have the ability to chew through the nevela unless it's cut down to small pieces. Tashma, gonna have another raya and a kasha to review them. The Tani Rav Chanan in Arda, he taught us as follows. Mefarchinon, or mefarchin, teven, teven is hay, vaspasta, that's that grass fed to the animals. So one can go ahead and shred these things, and mix them up together. Rashi says, the animal will be attracted to the grass, and by doing so, will also eat up the tevin. Alma tachina b'uchla. Apparently, one can go and do tircha to enhance, improve the flavor and quality of the animal feed. Says, well, no, here it's actually necessary for him to chop it down to make it edible in the first place. Tevin, the hay that we're speaking here is betivin asaria, spoiled hay, which must be cut down to size for him to make it accessible and edible. Asfasta, this animal grass that we're speaking about here, is be'ili zutri, when he's feeding it to small donkeys, in which case they can't really chew through it unless it is in shredded form. So in summary, we're going to be about preparing food for animal on Shabbos. Rav Huna's approach is, one may enhance, improve, do tircha for the convenience of the animal, but he cannot fashion and craft animal food on Shabbos. Therefore, according to his approach, the Mishnah says as follows. Pikin, those are the double-tied bundles of straw, and kipin, the triple-tied bundles. He can be matir, he can untie the ties, and it can be mefaspeh, spread them out, disperse them, prepare them for the animal's meal. Regarding those zirin, the bundles of branches, he can't be matir, nor can he be mefaspeh, because that's firewood, which he's turning into animal feed, and he can't do that on Shabbos. Review those approaches. Whatever is necessary for the feeding of the animal's mutter, but whatever is not actually vital and critical, merely to enhance and improve the quality for the sake of the animal's pleasure, that's asur. So according to his approach, the Mishnah says as follows. Pikin, which are those double-tied bundles of straw, he can open them up to make them available for his animal, but he can't be mephaspe, he can't spread them out for the animal's convenience. Kipin, which are the bundles of the branches, he can open them up and he can also spread them out, even though he's rendering them edible. He's making them oichel, ashvui oichel is mutter. Regarding zirin, which are the triple-tied bundles of straw, he can open them to make them accessible, but he can't spread them out. That's merely for convenience sake. That's merely for the sake of the animal's pleasure. And that can't be done. According to Yehuda's approach, we're going to understand the Mishnah as follows. Tanakhama says, this is the second part of the Mishnah, you can't be morasic. You can't crush the shachas, the grass fed to the animals, or the charuvin, these soft carobs, because one is not allowed to be matriach boichal, to enhance and to improve the quality of the food for the sake of the animal's pleasure. So since these things are edible as is, you can't go ahead and exert an effort in them. Rabbi Yehuda says, well, when it comes to charuvin, for Rei Madaka, it's mutar, because this small animal doesn't have the ability to chew through even these soft carobs. Therefore, it is something necessary and vital for the feeding of this Be'ema Daka. It's a Shvui Oichla. And therefore, Yehuda maintains, one can crush the Charuvim for the sake of Be'ema Daka on Shabbos. Continues the Mishnah. Ein Oifsin es Hagomol. The Mishnah will proceed to instruct us regarding the actual feeding of animals on Shabbos. And the underlying principle here will be that ordinary feeding, normative feeding is mutter. But excessive feeding, overfeeding, force feeding, which involves tircha yisera, excessive exertion, will be asur on Shabbos. Says the Mishnah, in Oifsin es Hagomol, one may not force feed a camel with large amounts of food. They used to push the food down his throat past the swallowing point, so he no longer has the ability to bring up that food to spit it out. And apparently this was done in anticipation of a long journey. And the word Oifsin here is taken from the word Avos, which means a feeding trough, a feeding container. So to actually force him to eat so much food that they would create this storage area, this food storage within him, to sustain him throughout his trip. So one may not engage in this form of feeding on Shabbos. Ein oifsin es hagomol v'lo yidorsin. This is a similar form of force feeding, which involves a lesser quantity of food. Avo mal'itin. But a different method, which is called mal'itin, is mutter. Now, these terms employed here to describe different methods of feeding seem to be a bit cryptic, which the Gemara will explain for us. So once again, oifsin and dorsin are asur. Mal'itin is mutter. What about calves? Vein mamir nesagolam. One may not force feed the calves. Ava mal'itin. But mal'itin, which is the more moderate form of feeding, is mutter, just as it was mutter when it came to the camels. Umahalkatin letarnagolam. When it comes to feeding chickens, one may feed them in a manner which is called mahalkatin. Venoisin maim lemursum. One may pour water into the mursum, which are the remnants which remain in the sifter after the flour is sifted, and that is given to the chickens. So you can pour the water in there to dilute it. Avaloi goivlin. But one may not mix this formula because that would involve a malach of lisha, of kneading. Vei nois n'mayim v'fnei dvoirim. One may not place water before bees. V'fnei yoinim shebeshovach. In front of the pigeons, which live up in the cove, in the shovach, in the bird nest, because they're not dependent on you for their water. Aval noisin l'fnei avozim, but one may serve water before the ducks of the tarnagolim and chickens of the yoin hadusois, these types of pigeons which are domesticated, and indeed they are dependent on you for their sustenance, for their water, so you may serve them on Shabbos. Says the Gemara, my ein oivsin. What exactly is this oivsin described in the Mishnah? Om Rabbi Yehuda, ein oivsin la avos b'seich meyah. One may not do oivsin, which means to create an avos, this storage area, this food storage area within its stomach, in anticipation of its journey. Is it possible to even create such a large storage area of food within the animal's stomach? Yes, says the Gemara, in yes. As your Yirmiyahu b'Difti related, I witnessed this certain Arab merchant who was preparing for a long trip, and he force-fed his camel a large amount, a huge amount of food. Then he proceeded to load up another kur of animal feed on his camel for the trip. Continues the Gemara, Ein Ma'amirin. So we learned that Oifsin can't do, you can't do Dursin, you can't do Ma'amirin, but you can do Mal'itin. Now what is the difference between a Ma'amirin and Mal'itin? Eze Yamra, what is Ma'amirin, which here is described as Hamra? What is the halata? Which is what? What is the difference between both of these methods? Amar Yehuda, hamra means force feeding the animal in a manner where you're forcing the food down its throat past the swallowing point, to a place the animal doesn't have the ability to bring up that food any longer. So that's a severe form of force feeding that involves a tirchi yisera, and that's awesome. Halata, on the other hand, is merely force feeding him, not pushing it so far down, but merely placing it in a place where the animal does have the ability to spit it back out, and that is not considered to be such a severe form of force feeding, and that's mutter. Rav Chisda Amar, no. Idi, both Hamra and Halata are describing feeding the animal in a way where you're placing the food in an area of no return. What then is the difference between two things? V'amra b'kli, halata b'yad. Hamra is describing a method using a kli. So he's using a utensil to force feed the animal, which is a more serious form of force feeding, and that's asr. Halata, on the other hand, is merely b'yad. Using one's hand, he's manually force feeding it, therefore it's mut. So in summary, up to this point in the Gemara, we have as follows. Oivsin and dursim and ma'mirin are all asr. These methods are described as force feeding an animal, pushing the food to the point of no return. According to Rabbi Yehuda, that in itself is the reason to make it awesome. According to Rabbi Chisda, these methods involve using a utensil. That's why it's awesome. This is in contrast to mal'itin, which is mutter. According to Rabbi Yehuda, this is referring to a method where he's force feeding it, but he's not pushing the food to the point of no return. According to Rabbi Chisda, even if he's pushing it that far as mutter, provided he uses his hands, he's manually doing it, and therefore it's mut. Masar Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef asked a kasha on Rav Yehuda. Again, Rav Yehuda maintains that pushing the food past the point of no return is asr. It is only mutter if it is at the point where the animal's yechayla la'achser can still push it back out. The Brisa says as follows, Mahal ketin l'tarnagoylim. One can feed chickens in a manner which is called mahal ketin, which the Gemara will describe for us. And certainly, it's needless to say that you can feed them in a manner which is called malkitim, which is less involving, involves less exertion, less effort. So mahalkitim is mutter, and certainly malkitim. However, when it comes to these birds, which don't really need you for their sustenance, you can't feed them in a manner which is called malkitim, which is a lesser form of feeding. You can't do this liyoni shayvach to the pigeons which reside in the birdhouse, or liyoni aliyah, the pigeons reside up in the attic, because they're not dependent on you. So it's unnecessary tirch. Vein tirch lemesh ein mahalgatin, and certainly you can't employ the method of feeding which is called mahalgatin, which is more involving. So both methods are only mutter for the tarnagel, who is dependent on you for its sustenance, and not to these birds. Says the Gemara, my mahalgatin, or my malkitin. What exactly is the translation of these terms? Ilema, shall we say, mahalkatin means the safir l'biyadayim. That is manually feeding them, he's placing the food into their mouths. So this is a more involving method of feeding. Malkitim is a lesser form. The shadi le'kamayu is merely placing the food before them. So when it comes to a tarnagel, one may feed him in one of these two manners. Either manually or merely placing the food in front of them. But when it comes to the birds, which are not dependent on you, You can't employ any of these methods, whether manually feeding them or even placing food before them. Says Mar, how could that be? Mechlal, apparently, these birds, mishta kamayu namiloi, you can't even place food before them? Why not? There's no tircha involved whatsoever. Says Mar, ela lav, must be as follows. That both terms, mahalkitin and malkitin, are describing methods of feeding which involve the person, manually feeding them. Rather, the difference will be as follows. Mahalkitin is feeding him in a manner where you're force feeding him, where the animal no longer has the ability to retrieve it, to bring it back up. Malkitin, which is a lesser form of feeding, is feeding him, so putting the food in his mouth, but he has the ability to bring it back up and to spit it out. Therefore, when it comes to a chicken, both these methods are mutter, as opposed to a bird, which is not really dependent upon you for its sustenance, these yoni shoivich in aliyah, therefore, any of these methods cannot be employed. So here we have a clear braisa which tells us that one may force feed an animal, even if you're pushing the food down its throat past the swallowing point, where it doesn't have the ability any longer to bring it back up. It's mutter. Says the Gemara Mechlal, apparently, the hamra, the kli. When the Mishnah describes a form of feeding which is asr, a mamirin, apparently, you know why it's asr? Because he's using a kli. Because simply pushing the food past the swallowing point, it's pretty clear from this braisa, would be mutter on Shabbos. The only reason why something would be asr, apparently, is because he's using a utensil. This is in accordance with the Shita of Chizda, who says that only when using a utensil, a kli, is force feeding asr. And this is a kasha on Rabbi Yehuda. V'tuyuftadar Rabbi Yehuda. This seems to negate Rabbi Yehuda's approach, who holds that merely pushing food past a swallowing point is asr. Amalach Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda will respond as follows. Let's reinterpret the braisa. Let's reinterpret these two terms of mahalkatin and malkit. Lo'olam, truthfully, mahalkatin means the safil yadayim. He's actually feeding, he's manually feeding the animal, putting the food in his mouth. But certainly, he's placing it at a point of return before the swallowing point. The animal has the ability to spit it out, and therefore it's mutter. So that's mahalkitin. Malkitin, the other form of feeding, which is described in this braisa, it means as follows. The shadle kamayu is merely placing it before them. So it's a lesser form, a less involving method of feeding. And both of these methods may be employed for a chicken. But certainly, to push food past swallowing point would be usher in any case. Now we had one question here. If malkitin means putting the food in his mouth, malkitin merely means putting it before the animal, would the kash that you had, yoini shoivich v'yin aliyah, l'mishta kamayu namiloi, why then can this not be done for the yoini shoivich v'yin aliyah? Why can't he simply place the food before them? The Braisa tells us that placing food before a chicken is mutter, but before these birds is asr. Why not? You're not doing any tircha here. Says the Gemara, Hani, mezenoisan alecha. The chickens are dependent on you for their sustenance. Therefore, we allow preparing their food. Vahani, as opposed to these birds described here, eim mezenoisan alecha. They're mezenis. Their sustenance is not your responsibility. They're not dependent on you for their sustenance. Therefore, even merely serving them, placing the food before them, would be us. Kedisani, as we learned in the braisa, noisin mezoinis v'nei kelev. One may place food before a dog who is desperate for food and is dependent on you. Vei noisin mezoinis v'nei chazir. However, in front of a chazir, a swine, one may not place food. Umah hefresh bein zeh lazeh. What's the difference between one and the other? Zeh mezoin noisin v'alecha. The dog is dependent on you because he's selective. When it comes to this food, he's not like a chazir who eats indiscriminately. And also, Rashi says people don't generally throw too much food to dogs, as opposed to a chazir. For some reason, people feed it more. So this dog is dependent on you, and therefore you're allowed to place food before him on Shabbos. As opposed to the chazir, v'zeh, ein mezay noisav alecha, his food is not on you. You're not obligated. He's not dependent on you for his feed, and therefore there's no reason whatsoever to exert oneself to feed him, even by placing food before him. Omar Vashi, Maslis and Amideka. From our Mishnah as well, we have a raya to this concept that an animal who's not dependent on you for sustenance, you may not exert yourself for that animal. The Mishnah says one may not place water in front of bees, before pigeons who live in this cove, in this birdhouse, who are not dependent on you for their sustenance. One may place water before ducks, before chickens, before these types of domesticated pigeons, which are dependent on you. My time. What is the difference between these and those? Lav mishum dahani mizonoisan alecha. Apparently, because the second list of animals are dependent on you, and therefore you can serve them. Vahani, as opposed to the first list, aim mizonoisan alecha, their mizonos are not on you, meaning they're not obligated, they're not dependent upon you. They can find their own sustenance, and therefore you can't serve them. So we see clearly that this Mishnah of ours teaches us this concept. Says Gemara, according to you, and this is the point of the Mishnah, an animal who is not dependent upon you for its sustenance, you can't feed it. So why does the Mishnah specifically discuss water? Why specifically water? Even when it comes to solid foods, like wheat or barley, you should not be able to serve an animal who is not dependent on you. Ella, rather, there's a specific reason why the Mishnah discusses water. Perhaps, when it comes to solid foods, you may serve even an animal who's not really dependent upon you. Ella shani maya, water is different. The shchichi ba'agma, water is very much accessible, very much easily found. It's plentiful out in the agma and the swamp. So these animals who are animals which roam the wilderness and can find water readily available to them, there's no justification to go serve them. So this is specific to water which is readily available, as opposed to the animals which are dependent upon you, the domesticated, the chickens, etc., which are totally dependent upon you, so you can serve them in water. But perhaps when it comes to solid foods, which is not so readily available like water, perhaps even an animal who's not really dependent upon you for sustenance, you may indeed serve them. So there's no real raya from our Mishnah when it comes to solid foods. Continues the Gemara. Darash Rabbi Yoina apischa de benesia. So Rabbi Yoina spoke out and he gave a speech, a drasha, at the doorpost, at the entranceway of the home of the Nasi. My dechsiv. What does the following pasuk mean? Yudei tzadik din dalim. Hashem knows, who Hashem was the tzadik, knows the condition of the paupers. Yudei HaKadosh Baruch Hu bekelev. Hashem is fully aware that a dog, regarding the state of a dog, his sources of sustenance are mu'atim. He has very little source of sustenance. That's why Hashem prolonged the digestive process of his food. He doesn't digest until 3 days, so that his food should last him, because it's not as going to the Mishnah. We're speaking about the basar of a mace, the flesh of that person which is metame. It imparts tumah. Now, if it was swallowed by an animal, and while the animal is alive, the flesh of the mace within the system of the animal does not transfer tumah because it's considered to be balua. It's swallowed within a living being. What if the animal dies? Is that basar of mace that's within this animal considered to be something which is metame? Do we view it as something intact? Or perhaps it's been digested and is no longer reckoned with. So the question is, up until what point do we consider it to be intact? Kama tisha achilasa b'meyav, how long should the food have remained in the animal's stomach, v'yetame, and it should still retain its tumah status, we still view it as though it's still intact. Bikelev, when it comes to a dog, gimel yom meisleis. Until 3 full days, we consider the basar of the mace contained therein as though it's intact. So we see clearly that the digestive process of a dog only completes at the end of 3 full days. Uba'ivis, ubedogim, in contrast to the basar of mace swallowed by birds and by fish, where the digestive system works quicker, kadesha tipa la'urvetitzarif. It's only a very small amount of time that we allow, as long as it takes for something to fall into a fire and burn up. So if that time has elapsed, since the oif and the dog swallowed it, we no longer consider the basar mace to be intact. So we see clearly again that a kelef has a long, prolonged digestive system, And this was done as a chesed from Hashem to allow him to live unless. We hear from this, the fact that Hashem took care and expressed concern when it comes to a dog, we hear from this, it is proper to toss a chunk of meat to a stray dog. What size meat? Or he went to offer him Amar Mori, Meshach Udne, very small piece, a size that's equal to his ear, the Chusha Basrei, and immediately followed with a bang of a strike of a with a stick, in order to chase him away so he doesn't come back and become a regular customer. Hanimil Bedaver. Now this is only said regarding a dog out in the wilderness, Avo Bemasaloi, but a dog within the built-up area inside the city, don't offer him any food if he's not your dog. The Asal Misra, because he may grow accustomed to this and he might follow you and become a nuisance, and therefore don't offer this dog any food. Omra Papa, Leis de Anya Mikalva. Amongst all creatures, there's no creature which is poorer than a dog, as we described earlier. Veleis de Atya Mechazira. There's no wealthier creature than a chazer, whose food is plentiful, a source of sustenance, is all over the place, all the garbage dumps, and he's well fed, so he's a wealthy animal. Continues the Gemara, getting back to our discussion earlier, where Rabbi Yehuda told us that force feeding an animal past the point of no return is asur, but simply force feeding him, placing the food in a place where the animal still has the ability to spit it out would be mutter. What describes hamra, which is the former feeding, which is mutter? Hamra, which is asr. What is the method described as alata, which is mutter? Hamra, which is the force feeding, which is asr, is as follows. Marbitza, so he lies down, the animal picks his pia, and he keeps the animal's mouth forcibly opened, and he pours down kashin and veg, some type of beans, umayim, mixed with water, vasachas, together, so that it runs down its throat, and he doesn't have the ability to spit it out. So this is a very severe form of force feeding, which is asur on Shabbos. Halat, on the other hand, is a more moderate form of feeding. Machila mu'umad, he feeds him when he's in a standing position. Umashka mu'ubad, he gives him to drink when the animal is standing up, and he feeds him these beans on their own, and water independently, to wash down, to help him swallow down those beans, but he doesn't forcibly push it down his throat. So this is a more moderate form of a feeding, and it's mutter on Shabbos. So in summary, regarding force feeding an animal, that's asur on Shabbos. What are examples of force feeding, which is asur, oivisin, dursin, mamirin? According to Rabbi Yehuda, it means pushing the food past the swallowing point, past the point of no return. According to Rabbi Chizda, this is only asur, provided he uses a kli to force feed. We have a category of methods which are mutter, mal'itin, mahalkitin, which according to Rabbi Yehuda means putting the food in a place where the animal has the ability to bring it up and spit it out. According to Rabbi Chizda, even if he doesn't have that ability, it's mutter provided the person is feeding merely using his hands. We have malkitin. According to Rav Yehuda, means merely placing food before the animal. According to Rav Chizda, means force feeding him, pushing it, but the animal does have the ability to push it back out, and that's mutter. We have noisin maim lefnei, which is mutter. And then we're concluded, this is only mutter when the animal is dependent on you for its sustenance. According to one version of the Gemara, the restriction is only regarding water, because it is plentiful and accessible to these animals. Okay, time for a brief review of today's daf. We began with the Mishnah, which instructed us on how to prepare animal feed on Shabbos. We have two approaches. Rav Huna's approach is that one might do things to enhance the quality for the sake of the animal's convenience and pleasure. So one can go ahead and untie pikin, which are the double-tied, double-knotted hay bundles. You can untie them, matir, and maybe a fast space, and spread out the contents for the sake of the animal's convenience. The same thing regarding keeping the triple-tied hay bundles. However, regarding zirin, which are those bundles of branches, which are generally kept and used as firewood, he can't untie them, he can't spread them out, because he's forming something anew, he's creating, he's turning something into animal feed, which is asur on Shabbos. Rav Yehuda maintains Anything which is necessary, anything which is vital for the animals eating is mutter to be done. Therefore, he says, the double-tied bundles of hay, pekiyin, one we can open them up to make them accessible for the animal, but he can't spread out the content, which is merely for the animal's convenience. Regarding kipin, which means, according to Abuda, the bundles of branches, he can open them up and spread out the content to make them edible for the animal. Zirin, which are the triple-tied hay bundles, he can open them up to make them accessible, but he cannot spread them out. But the Tanakhama will hold that he cannot crush shachas and cheruvin, the grass and the carob for the animal. That's merely for the sake of the animal's pleasure. Abuda maintains he can crush the cheruvin, the carob, for the behemoth daka, because otherwise it's an edible for him. We concluded regarding feeding animals, so if it's done in a normative manner, it's mutter provided the animal is dependent on you for its sustenance. But he cannot go ahead and force feed it, do things in a manner which overexerts himself, tircha, which is also on Shabbos.